Are you with the crowd that wants to demolish Southern statues and burn Southern flags after praying for answers in the Temple of St. Lincoln?
We killed tens of thousands of American citizens, maybe hundreds of thousands, with no due process whatever in the Civil War, and it was the right thing to do.
Whoa, I thought you were one of the good guys. Maybe you should start going to church every day instead. Mike Church, that is.
It's good! It's good! It's good to see you all in church.
It's good to see you too, here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
About there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
T-minus 21 days, so we're 23 weeks old today. May the 11th makes it 26 weeks. Let us pray for 27 weeks, shall we? Go to VeritasRadioNetwork.com. Meet SOS, our crowdfunding mascot dog. Drop something in his bowl and watch his tail wag. It's the Mike Church Show here, the formerly longest-running radio talk show in the history of satellite radio. Have you seen our ad? You know, you can go to there's so many different ways that so many different people. Now, either Google is lying to me and jacking up the stats, or we have an awful lot of people that are curiosity seekers on our website at VeritasRadioNetwork.com and at MikeChurch.com. Perhaps I need to publish some of these things on both because MikeChurch.com still has about twice the traffic on it, but Veritas Radio Network is... If I showed you the graph in visits, you would you'd be impressed. You'd go like, you guys have got to be doing awesome. Look at the visits. Well, yeah, it's being checked out. But I have to say that there's many different ways that people could participate in and get on the ground floor of this, the Crusade Channel, and the Veritas Radio Network. Now, if you just go to the site today and you want to send a show to a friend, what is preventing you? We're publishing now an entire segment, free of charge, of this show. Usually they're an hour long. Don't cost nothing. And they are presented in a form because we have now turned our media over to a content network, what's called a content distribution network, a CDN. And they provide the coded infrastructure to display the content. It works in every browser mankind has ever invented, going all the way back to Netscape in 1992, I suspect. We're styling it so it works on every phone. In other words, all the impediments to the success of this endeavor here have been or are being removed. But without the people in the checkout lines, well, then it is what it is, folks. So go meet SOS, our mascot dog. You can subscribe to the Veritas Radio Network for just 23 cents per day. You get downloads now of all those shows. If you can't see all the work that went into presenting the content in a way that is so easy for anyone to access and now to download and to take with you. We got RSS feeds that will update you automatically. I don't know what else to tell you. But I'm always open to suggestions. My email, kingdude@mikechurch.com. Often given out, hardly ever, if ever, rarely used. But maybe today is the day. You can also find us on the Facebook Veritas Radio Network and on the Twitter at Veritas Radio Net. And please stop by today and check out the new site. It really is a sight to behold. And as I said, couple of weeks ago for the last 2 weeks trying to make it the greatest radio station website in the history of great radio station websites. Also, brand new to the Radio the Way It Should Be marketing campaign today is a still shot of James Stewart from the film It's a Wonderful Life when he's on the bridge begging for God to send Clarence, for Clarence to intercede to Almighty God to send him back from whence he came. And in the nightmare of what life would be like if George Bailey had never been born or had he died in the ice that day. And it's under the caption of prayer the way it should be. Another opportunity to forward that around as a meme. Doesn't need any description. Then at the bottom, you know, we have our little logo down there. That means we have 26 more memes. And I'm sure I will add more tweaks now and then. 26 more memes to get out into the social media stream that you can send around to friends and family. So go check it out. There's an entire slideshow there for you to view and to make a selection or to like or to tweet or whatever you wish to do. Again, that's Prayer the Way It Should Be, starring or featuring Jimmy Stewart. Okay, 844-527-8723 is the telephone number. This show is live weekday mornings, 8 to 11 a.m. Today is no exception. We talk about just war or unjust war on this show all the time. Two words that have either been removed from our vocabulary or are in the vocabulary of some people and are not understood. The Latin termination for the just war is jus ad bellum. And many of you know it as jus ad bellum because some of you have military training. Well, the United States and most of the Western world, certainly the NATO countries, do not practice jus ad bellum any longer. We don't in any way, shape, or form. And most Americans have no problem with it whatsoever. This is huge. This is part of the black speck, nay, the 460-pound black tumor that has been imprinted on the soul of the United States. Don't kid yourself. This is not a Christian nation, and our attitude and the way we conduct war says that it's not. So I have been probing this issue for 4 years now. May have converted some of you to at least begin thinking about just war, but we haven't had anyone other than Dr. Angelo Codevilla here on the program to actually discuss just war theory, jus ad bellum, and what it actually entails and how we might implement it today until today. And if you go to the website, thosecatholicmen.com, great little website, you'll find the writings of Dr. Donald Prudlow. And Dr. Prudlow is in, I don't know if he's in the middle of or at the end of a five-part series about just war. It's about time someone picked the mantle up and took this issue and tried to explain it to the masses. So Dr. Prudlow has been generous and gracious with his time and is here on the Dude Maker Hotline. Dr. Donald Prudlow, welcome to the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. How are you, my friend?
I'm fine, thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for the invite.
You're very, very welcome. Are we in, now is part five, is that the final piece in your series, or does it continue?
There should be one more summary piece coming out at the middle of May, I think.
Now, can I ask you, what was the impetus? Did the editors of those Catholic Men ask you to do this, or did you ask them?
No, it's part of my interest in sort of teachings that, like you said, have been forgotten. And I just wanted to remind people and help them think through these issues, and in particular because for Catholics in particular, I think there's a lot of misapprehensions about pacifism and the relation of the church to war, biblical theology, sacred tradition, what it has to say, and so I wanted to clear that up a little bit.
Now, when we talk about or when we even mention the term just war theory, I had this conversation with someone the other day, because he's a little confused about this. And I said, well, just war theory implies that necessarily that there is such a thing as a just war.
Right.
And it's the only war that as a Christian and certainly as a Catholic, you are allowed to or permitted to participate in.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain maybe a little bit of the history, okay, why did we need, or how did a just war theory come about?
Well, we needed it because of original sin. I mean, it goes back that far, that no matter how good we are, how holy we are, there are always going to be bad men who are trying to deprive us of life, liberty, and property. And because of that, there are those who have the care of a community whose responsibility it is to defend their people, particularly those who are weak and those who cannot fight, against the depredations of people out there who want to take it away from us.
Now, how long does this go back? Many people think it just begins with Augustine. Was Augustine the first, or was St. Martin of Tours? Wasn't St. Martin of Tours before Augustine?
He was. Well, they were close to contemporaries. Martin was a little older, but I mean, this comes out of the biblical tradition. I mean, the Lord is a God of battles, as well as being a Prince of Peace. I try to explore those themes in my work, but we see God ordering his people to fight, ordering his people to defend the weak and to establish his kingdom on earth. We see him setting up kingdoms, and we see in the early church, we see how well the Roman legionaries come off in the New Testament. Christ praises their faith. They are some of the first ones to make confessions of the divinity of Christ. They are the first Gentiles who are baptized into the church. And yet, in none of those are they. Does it say that they left their arms or they abandoned their professions? Rather, it says that they bear the sword of God for the execution of justice, which is what St. Paul says. And so it develops from there because of in the early church, the Christians didn't have any political power. A lot of the questions that arose later weren't simply there. That said, Christians, particularly in the Roman legions, continued to follow their calling, to follow their vocation. There was no pacifistic strain in Christianity. Indeed, Christianity spread most quickly by means of the Roman legions. It was only when the Roman emperors decided that they had to commit idolatry in order to continue serving in the legions, that's when the Christian saints, people like Maurice and George and Demetrius,
right,
were forced to make a choice, and they made a choice to say that I'm not going to serve with dishonor, and they underwent martyrdom for that, but not because they refused to fight. But then after Constantine, after the legalization of Christianity, Christians become lawmakers, then it's up to people like Basil and Augustine to come up with how the church is to respond, given its tradition, to these new situations.
You know what I find fascinating about the study of St. Augustine and pretty much anything he wrote? Dr. Donald Prudlow is on the Dude Maker Hotline with us at 844-5-CRUSADE. If you have a question about just war theory, now would be a great time for you to ask it. What fascinates me about this is Augustine, for almost everyone that I run into when I do a search for something that Augustine might have written about, Augustine comes out being this egomaniacal, I guess you could attach megalomaniac, I guess you could attach Machiavellian character, who turned the entire ancient world into this world of misery and toil and unhappiness and darkness, and everything he touched, you know, was dogmatic and made everyone miserable, and you couldn't do anything thanks to Augustine. When I read Augustine, and I read, I don't get that at all. And when I read his what he wrote about Jus ad Bellum, I don't get that either. I read a very conflicted man who was as much of the earth and as much a pagan as anyone, or a heretic, if you will, as anyone ever could have been, who is trying to find, he's trying to get at the truth. Where am
right.
I wrong?
No, that's exactly right. When you read Augustine, when you confront Augustine, he's one of the most authentically human people that ever lived. And I don't think anyone that's ever picked up seriously and read Confessions can say anything else. He is on fire with a love for the truth. That's what animates his whole life. And he is a very, very sensitive pastor. He works out these rules of just war in letters to his friends, to Roman generals, to political figures, and in the midst of governing his own local community. I mean, this is so far away from a dogmatic theologian, you know, lost in an ivory tower. It's just not even worth comparing.
I looked at Lost in an Ivory Tower. There's a great scene in the movie Restless Heart. I don't know if you've seen it. Ignatius Press has now put it out on DVD. Where actually the film starts with an aged Augustine. He's in Hippo, and I guess it's the Visigoths have the town surrounded. And they're getting ready to go. They're going to burn it down. And he's got a Roman general in there that's saying, we're going to go out and meet him on the battlefield. And Augustus says, you go out there, you're going to get killed. They're going to kill all of you. They're going to come here and kill all of us. And then Augustine, towards the end of the film, he marches out with his staff, you know, his, I don't know what they called it, the staff that the popes and the...
The croziers, right.
The croziers, right. He marches out with his crozier, and he comes up to the guards, and they're like, what do you want, old man? And he introduces himself, I'm Augustine. I'm the bishop of the city. I'm like, I want to speak to the commandant or whatever. And then he gets let in the tent, and the commandant says, no, you're going to get a lot of nerve coming in here, et cetera, et cetera. And Augustine says, I'll make you a deal. You take me, and you can hold me for ransom, and I'll fetch a pretty high price. Spare those people. I'll send an order back that the Roman army won't come in, and just give them a chance to put their stuff together and let them leave peacefully, and you'll never hear from us again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much how the city of Hippo falls, and the consul actually does have to get into a skirmish with the Romans who are inside Hippo. But the point is that even in the midst of what was going to be a war, you see some just ad war appeal right there, and that's a historical reenactment, by the way, with St. Augustine marching out there and saying, look, these people, there's women and children in there. They're not going to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that part of what we consider when we talk about just war theory, unjust war?
That's exactly right. One of the main concerns of the church in developing a just war theory is that you have got to prevent combat for non-combatants, for the weak, that the purpose of strength is to defend the weak. And so that's what responsibility comes with, that sort of civil power, or the power of the church, as Augustine demonstrates there. So civilian casualties have absolutely got to be avoided or minimized as much as possible when you're engaged in a just war.
It's really, truly amazing. Dr. Donald Prudlow is on the Dude Maker hotline with us. He writes at Those Catholic Men and thosecatholicmen.com, rather. Now, the most recent piece that I have from you is Can Man Be Holy and Wage War? That's the question, really, that Augustine is trying to get at and that the theory is trying to get at. Can man be holy and wage war?
This is, it seems on the surface of it to be a paradox, right?
Yes.
I mean, how in the Christian world, when we're told to turn the other cheek, how could possibly somebody engaged in killing someone else ever be holy?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that when you that we have to make distinctions. This is the thing that Augustine does so well, is that killing is a morally neutral act until it's specified by an intention. If you take someone's life unjustly, killing turns into murder, and it's an immoral act. However, since Christ doesn't abolish the natural law, every single one of us has the right to self-preservation. And so repelling an unjust aggressor is actually an act that's conducive to our nature, that is a good act, and particularly when we use our strength to repel the attacks of the wicked on the weak. This is itself a holy task, and indeed, it's what the civil authorities are charged with doing, or anyone who has care of a community, or father of a family, for instance.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. It's also a history of saints that actually had to fight in battle. For example, Saint George, who is usually depicted as some sort of battle gear,
right,
with a shield at least. You have this is not very well known to all the hippies that have tried to appropriate Saint Francis of Assisi as some sort of a pagan.
Mm-hmm.
But Francis, when the town of Assisi or the province that he lived in called him into battle or called into war, he actually signed up, put a uniform on, didn't he?
He did, and he became a prisoner of war himself, which affects his, and was actually a model prisoner of war, helping his other prisoners during that difficult time. So in a certain sense, he's a patron of that difficult situation. But he always imagined himself, even after his conversion as a soldier of Christ, just one that uses different weapons. The way that Christians, particularly Christian men throughout history, have imagined the spiritual life is one of struggle, one of combat, one of battle. And that's a lot of language that we've lost, that there's an external battle, but there's also internal battles to fight.
And what about and then we march forward in history. What about Don John, blessed Holy Pope, St. Pope Pius V, put in command of what came to be known as the Holy Fleet? You know, if people knew the story of the Holy Fleet, they would dispense with this nonsense that the Mohammedans that we see marauding today are some kind of a new variety of evil and vicious Mohammedan. Because the Mohammedans that were under the command of, I guess it was it Ali Pasha,
mm-hmm.
At the Battle of Lepanto were as vicious and diabolical as any Mohammedan alive today, right?
Their attacks on the Mediterranean Christian islands were really, really horrific. I mean, they would, stuff people with straw and put them on their masts while they went into battle. It was a bad situation. Islam, for most of its first 1,000 years, was an offensive force taking areas that had been formerly Christian. I mean, we tend to forget that the entire entirety of North Africa, Augustine's North Africa, and the Middle East, they had been wholly Christianized by the time that Islam comes and remained a majority Christian up until the 13th and 14th centuries. And so that was one of the reasons for the Crusades, was defending those Christianities, and part of the concern we have today about those Christian minority communities. But yes, Islam was an offensive force. It threatened Europe on many occasions. Lepanto, as you say, in the 16th century, Vienna in the 17th century, as late as 1683, the Muslims were besieging the great city of Vienna in Central Europe, and people like Don Juan of Austria or King Jan Sobieski of Poland Christendom. They saved Western civilization, really.
That's exactly right. We've told all those stories here on the Crusade Channel, and we'll look forward to telling them again on their anniversary. One of the books, it's difficult to find reading material outside of articles that have been written in Catholic and other periodicals in the last 50 years or so. And one of the books, I don't know if you've read it, but that I stumbled upon, and I had to go searching for it, and I had to buy it from Abe Books.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get a copy from New Zealand, used. It has a library card in the back of it. Is The Just War, Force and Political Responsibility by Dr. Paul Ramsey.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Ramsey walks through, he and this is written in the 1960s, he sees what's coming. And he's principally grappling with the idea of the preventative use of nuclear arms.
Right.
And the conclusion that he reaches is that neither of the two bombings at either Hiroshima or Nagasaki would qualify as a precedent that you would build a just war theory upon. Do you concur with him?
I think, once again, we have to make a distinction. I mean, there's very few examples that you could cite more clearly of a war that is fought for a just cause than World War II.
Right.
The United States was attacked. War was declared upon us. But then after that, even though the war is just, the nation who is fighting a just war has the responsibility to maintain itself within the morality of natural law and of the Christian tradition. And so it is possible for a nation that's fighting a just war to do unjust things. And terrible things happen in wartime, but that does not, just because you're fighting a just war doesn't mean that excuses every one of your acts. Now, it would seem to me that the examples of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and also the firebombings of the German cities would be examples of unjust acts because they fundamentally targeted civilian territories indiscriminately.
Right.
There may have been, military installations, but I think most scholarship has demonstrated that it was designed for effect rather than for a military objective. And so if that is the case, then those were unjust acts. Now, that doesn't color the justice of the United States' cause in that war, but we are morally responsible for those things, yeah.
Well, and I think and where the disconnect is here between today and then, whenever you talk about this, and the reason that I would bring it up, and that I do bring it up, is to try and caution and guard against a future incident like this. But Dr. Prudlow, I can't think of any discussion that's been had since I have been an adult about any action that the U.S. military has undertaken where the term jus ad bellum was mentioned, or that just war was mentioned. It's almost as though it's settled that because we're America, we don't even have to consider these things anymore. If we say it's just, we're God's chosen people. It's just.
That is that's a bad attitude that's crept in. I mean, I must say that of the major powers, the United States attempts to fight wars as justly as possible with targeted missiles and things like that. But that doesn't mean that there are not injustices committed, like the Abu Ghraib prison or the My Lai massacre. And it used to be, I mean, I still think it is the case that military officers and military soldiers are taught about jus ad bellum and taught that they are not supposed to obey unjust orders. But the problem is, in our society, how is a person to recognize what is just from what is unjust, especially when their personal careers may be bound up with following such orders?
Wow.
And so we need to reconstruct an educational system, a society of virtue, before those rules that they teach them in the military schools can really come into effect.
Dr. Donald Perlow, who writes at Those Catholic Men, that's all the time we have today, Doctor. Thank you very much. Will you come back?
I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks. I enjoyed talking with you.
Love to have you again. Folks, that concludes this episode. Read Dr. Perlow's work on just war at thosecatholicmen.com. We'll be right back.